Should we say our opening prayer? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, Beloved David, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Om. Om. Peace, bliss, amen. Do a short meditation. This is, music is Sri Guru Sharanam. Dearest Guru.
Shri Guru Charanam, Shri Hari Charanam, 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 Shri Guru Charanam, Shri Hari Charanam. Charanam, Shri Hari Charanam.
Well, Joe, we can start with chapter 6, please.
Chapter 6, The Serpent Force, Kundalini. There is a tremendous power within each and every one of us. That power is untapped, but is a source of taking us to absolute sublimity. It will help us to transcend all the things of the world as we know them, and go into a world that is divine, that is filled with beauty, with light, with joy, with the bliss of God's infinite presence. At the base of the universe as we know it, all of the hierarchies, all of the stellar systems, there is a coiled electrical force, or a serpent force, which goes out in the universal sense and furnishes light and energy and intelligence to all of the worlds. In each man is that same serpent force, which is spoken of in the Bible, coiled at the base of the spine. The Hindus call it Kundalini. It is this great electrical force, this positive and negative force, which is part and parcel of the creative force that God sent forth from himself. It is the most powerful thing there is, because it is the basis, the foundation, sustaining all that we call creation and ourselves. This electrical force is what keeps us in duality. As you grow higher and higher into meditation and your consciousness rises, you will feel this burning power, this movement in the spine. You will feel heat gradually creeping up. Sometimes it will center itself at the Christ center, and sometimes in the thousand-petaled lotus of the brain, and you will find an expansion, a contraction. You will find that it is revolving almost like a snake itself, you see. Your brain goes through convulsions at times. Realize that when this heat is rising in the body, so that it is centering itself in the head, it is merely the electrical current which usually permeates your body equally from head to foot. Begin withdrawing from all of the other parts of the body and centering in the brain, and this is good. The baptism of fire is when the kundalini starts to rise in the spine. There is a burning sensation and your whole body becomes very, very hot. You could put your hand on a stove or a hot iron, anything, and it is not as hot as this fire that burns in you. I remember I was sitting at a dinner table just eating, and all of a sudden I felt this tremendous burning sensation all over my chest. So I went and looked, and the upper part of my body was as purple as a beet. It is our purpose to redirect and to use that tremendous power within ourselves for God. You will attain your God realization through the very use of this power, but it will be taken upward instead of outward and expended. As you keep the life force within yourself, as you learn to be master of yourself and keep your mind fixed fully upon God, then that serpent force gradually rises instead of being wasted out of your body. And it rises in the spine and you find that the power within you increases and increases until finally it goes out of your body through a small cavity in the brain and rests on the top of your head. You have no longer the division between good and evil within yourself, but the whole house is the house of the Lord. This serpent force, this electrical force, is lodged in the coccygeal center. It flows to the sex nerves and stimulates those nerves. The true meaning of the temptation of Adam and Eve is this sex force within you. The serpent, which tempted Eve to offer Adam the apple and Adam to eat it. This is called the original sin. This is where man fell because he indulged in things of sex and of the senses instead of realizing that this force was to be used to lift him to God. They call it the Great Fall because man wanted to eat of the tree of good, of knowledge of good and evil. His consciousness dropped or fell from the state of his knowledge of his oneness with God, the state of paradise. And he knew good and he knew evil, and he separated himself and his consciousness from God. He was to experience only reason and feeling, but on the higher level, not on the sex level. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Matthew 10:16. It is poisonous when we misuse it in the form of sex, but it gives us wisdom if we reverse the current through the methods and techniques that we are taught and take this electrical force up through the spine so that the power of the senses is withdrawn into the spine, the Sushumna passage, and then taken upward through the brain. Usually in the human state of consciousness, the serpent goes outward and is misused in sexual energy. But if you will learn through various methods to take it from the outer course, which it wants to adopt constantly, and send it up the spine, then it generates power and you start to have tremendous spiritual experiences. When you learn to do this, it will be one of the greatest lessons you have ever learned in your life. And you will find that your whole being will change and that which you thought you was something that gave you pleasure for the moment will seem like ashes in your mouth by comparison to the tremendous bliss and joy. I think that's the place to stop.
Okay. Larry. Thank you. Very powerful, isn't it? Yeah, this is spoken by someone who really knows this experience. Mother really knew it. She really lived it. You know, she's mentioning this happening. It sounds like she's in the West at a dinner table, did she say? And I remember Mother talking about the fact that she'd gone through some of the, you know, She didn't even know how far she had gone, but that she had gone through many of these experiences before she went to the ashram. And so, it's interesting to think that when she started it at the ashram, it was something that was familiar to her somewhat, more powerful probably. These are just surmise, but Mother did talk about it, how powerful it was. And she had that ability to interpret it and understand what's going through her, what's going on with her. And then she had the additional responsibility of looking up and comparing it to what the Christian scriptures, how they compare it, do they compare it, compare with it. I'd love to know when she connected the idea in her mind with in her teachings that crucifixion is kundalini, and that it's funny that she never, I never asked her, and nor did I hear anyone else ask her, and she never talked about it that way. When I knew her, she was so mature that she may well have forgotten some of the actual details or sequences of things. And then, of course, finally, I wonder, did she go through some of this again in her third crucifixion, as David called it? And that is what she went through in the early 80s. What was that like?
Well, I was just reading a letter of hers today in the early days, back when she'd met Papa. And she said she'd gone the way of the cross already. See, so that's what was interesting, because she'd already knew that that was the way of the cross. And she'd already experienced so much of that. And that's why I think, you know, it came as such a surprise to her to have to go through that huge experience at the ashram.
Yeah.
And she says again, I mean, I remember she says that she was surprised that she had to do it again.
Yeah.
And it would be very accelerated, wouldn't it? I wonder if it was words or if it was the acceleration.
Well, she always said it was so strong because it was to be impressed upon her so that she could then teach it. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see saints like Mataji who don't talk about the kundalini at all until it is ready, and that they have that experience of it going right up the spine and hitting the crown chakra all at once, and they receive enlightenment. And yet she never talked about whether she had or not, you know, that's not for, I wouldn't know that, but that's the kundalini, that it came, her whole being was prepared for it. It came and just within a couple of days, that whole kundalini experience brought her enlightenment.
The bhakti path is supposed to be the easiest. And so I wonder if that isn't part of what that means, that it's longer and slower. And then when it's, every cell is prepared, then it.
So let's talk about something that is implicit in Mother's teachings and not so much in others, other teachings. And that is that you must go through the third eye. No one can get to the Father except through me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. But that, and so I think we talked about this before, that people have these experiences where the energy goes up the spine and hits the top of the head. But here's my question, and I think there's some truth to it with some of the other great teachings and other iconography, the statues and things, showing the third eye point and the cobra coming out of the third eye point, and that it has to, energy has to come up the spine and then go out the third eye point and then to the top of the head. And that's the only way to attain full realization. So I'm, you know, Mother implied it strongly. But she never said that the experience of feeling it going through the crown, right to the crown chakra, it was a real experience. Of course, many people have had that experience and many people have talked about that. But that the more subtle story, the people who know the higher teachings, and I know I always go back to the Egyptians, but they certainly have that, and the Hindus definitely, the yogis definitely have that. They show a third eye point being very, very important, and the snake coming out of the third eye point. So let me just say a final thing about that, and we can discuss some more. But when the snake, and I think we've talked about this before, but when the snake, and I hope Mother talked about this in some of the things we've got transcribed of hers, but she did tell me that poison glands are near the top of the, near the glands underneath the jaw of the snake, that when those poison glands exit the body at the third eye point, that is symbolic of having all of the, first of all, duality, but also all of the poisonous aspects that cause us trouble. And exit the body, and now under our own will's control, no longer within the body, no longer causing trouble within.
I don't actually ever remember seeing that in anything. It doesn't mean it's not there, but I haven't personally seen it. Mm-hmm. So that's so
the iconography that you were talking about, Larry, because I think about, you know, the saint consciousness as a shorthand for that, mm-hmm. with the halo representing that where it's gone to the Christ consciousness without coming through the ajna. And did you see, and then with all like Krishna with the feather or the cobra.
Mm-hmm. Peacock, yeah.
The peacock feathers, the same third eye.
Well,
and
these
then
are
the Zoroastrian things and the Egyptian things.
What do you mean by Zoroastrian? What is there there?
I guess I mean the Egyptian.
Okay,
more.
So no, it could be the Zoroastrians. Meher Baba definitely implies that they had the highest teachings. The Persians, the Parsis, and mm-hmm. the Sufis had the same. By the way, if you look at the beginning of chapter 6, on the other side of the face, mm-hmm. you'll see a depiction of the cobra snake coming out of the third eye point on this.
This is
Amenhotep III, by the way, who was the father of Amenhotep IV, who became Akhenaten, and is connected to that story that we've had about the Jews perhaps being. When Akhenaten died, they may have been kicked. If there is a connection to the Jews, with Akhenaten being a monotheist, and they left Egypt because of that, and took the monotheistic culture, monotheistic story out with them, and the priests, Egyptian priests. Now this is surmise. I know we're talking about Mother's book, but it's worth talking about. But the notion that they took it out of at that time. It does tie, there's a great deal of discussion and argument about exactly when the Exodus was. And so you'll read about it, and they would, and there are many people who poo-poo the idea, because this is a Velikovsky idea, that he claimed that Jews influenced Akhenaten. And other people think Akhenaten had influenced a large group of people who became the Jews. So who knows? But they certainly were. By the time Nefertiti was losing power and then died, her son completely purged the whole place. They moved the whole capital back down to Luxor, and they purged the area of all the people. Well, they would not have felt welcome there, that's for sure. So that it could have been that. Something like that happened, though. But the more important thing. Go ahead.
Mother said something, and I was trying to find it quickly, but about through the head, the kundalini fire sensation.
Well, it goes up through a small hole.
Small hole. But that's
entering the skull itself at the base. I believe that's what that is. Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't talking about the ajna. Rises. Finally goes out of your body through a small cavity in the brain and rests on the top of your head.
Okay, well then that is the third eye, isn't it? Something like that. Interesting.
Well, at the top of your head, though.
Yeah, yeah, good point. Very strange.
You have no longer the division between good and evil. So that's like what you're talking about with the poison within yourself. But the whole house is the house of the Lord.
It's funny that she doesn't talk about that small hole being at the third eye, does she, in that case?
No.
So I noticed that too when you were reading it, and I had read it before. And of course, we want to just put this all out as Mother said it, rather than try to interpret it for her. And, because she does talk about the necessity of it going through the third eye, through our Christ Center.
Oh, but it is a small cavity in the brain and rests and then rests. I mean, it doesn't say and rests on the top of your head. So yeah, that does jive with the idea of the third eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you'd think she would say that more explicitly, wouldn't you? I suppose we should. Now, Kate has all of the dates for these particular paragraphs. So we could go up and see when this was said. So, but I mean, I certainly heard her talk in exactly that way, and going through a hole. And so it wasn't her, we always have to think twice before we assume that Mother didn't improve on the story or understand it more clearly later in her life. But because in the 60s, she said that she hadn't attained full realization. And my classic example, and one we want to always, discuss, is she, in the 60s, claimed that the Mount of Olives were the tonsils. Mm-hmm. And she later came to know that it was the eyes. The eyes were the olives mentioned in the Mount of Olives. You know, there's so many things about the Bible. For instance, one criticism that the people investigating the Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff that I've read about that, they're very critical of the notion that Nazareth even existed before Jesus' time, that it was the second century before Nazareth was even a town. And certainly the name did not exist in anything that the Romans had. No knowledge of Nazareth. Bethlehem, definitely. And of course, many others. But there's a few things that are anomalous and clearly added or clearly used differently than the people at the time were familiar with. But we all accept the fact that some great masters told this story in this first, second century and to better explain the higher teachings. I think that's undeniable.
I was just wondering, I'm kind of stuck on this small cavity in the brain. If you go back from the third eye point, then there is a space back there, which is where the two, lobes of the brain, there is a space, right?
Well, there are locations for the pineal and pituitary glands.
I'm trying to remember my brain anatomy.
Yeah, there's
a long time ago.
Well, there's something that produces the fluid that goes to the pineal and pituitary gland. Maybe Rebecca remembers that terminology through some of her readings, but there is a ventricle from which the fluid starts and goes into the other, into the two glands. And ventricles are cavities.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are things we have to experience ourselves. And even then, you don't necessarily know that this is what Mother was talking about. We just, that clarity of mind that Mother had, and she went over it many times, and she had her nose rubbed in some of these experiences. So she really, really knew, what was being described there. So we can only ask that Mother teach us or give us the experience.
Thank you.
Well, I was just thinking about how it's not an exact science and not an exact analogy, but Mother is giving us the symbols. I mean, if you take the whole Christ story, and the Christ story being a metaphor for the transformation each has to do from the human to the divine, but then all the different symbols, and some she has related as the yogis do to certain parts of the body. And some of the other symbols seem to be somewhat fluid. Remember the conversation we were having with Mira on Sunday, where David, and now I've forgotten the detail of what he said, he realized something.
About what a saint, what is a saint, and does a saint known by...
No, it wasn't that. It was a different one. It was just him talking about some symbols. Do you remember, Mira, what that was? And then I said, and this is what Mother says about that. And it was different, but it wasn't something that was crucial to the whole story. And I just really believe that the different, that they were kind of fluid with Mother.
Kate, is this what I understand? Do you remember Mira asked me to stop the recording and play it back? Is that the time for that stuff?
I don't know. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Because that part he was talking about, in fact, we need to get that quote out because it's a fascinating point that he's making. That sainthood is not something first of all, he's saying it's not something that other people give you, you know, and you know, it is something self-luminous. It is something, for those who have eyes to see, who can see it. It is something about the person itself that is, and he talked about it in a luminous form. How the person himself or herself can know this was because of this luminous body.
It wasn't that.
So it wasn't that. Okay.
Symbol, and I'm sorry, I forgot. Yeah. I only brought it up because I thought that maybe you or Mira would remember.
Okay. Well, state it again, and then we'll try one more time. Best you remember it.
I don't remember the symbols at all. I just remember us discussing afterwards how it's not entirely important because each person's experience is slightly different. Like you have kind of a general roadmap, but then you're doing, you know, you're maybe taking a detour, or you're on the other side of the road or something.
Right.
And so that when he has the realization of what these particular symbols from the Bible mean, the fact that they are different than something Mother has said in the past, there's in no way make them that wrong. And that's why Mother sometimes, as she refines her teachings, or it may occur to her as it does to us. And
okay. Well,
Eucharist taking place in that type of way, you know, that doesn't seem to be a universal experience. And yet.
Well, we don't know because people just swallow it, she said. You know, she said that people don't, they go through that so quickly, they don't know that it is something.
Yeah, but that to have that whole experience that she has as the Eucharist, right. it seems to be particular to the person and to Mother creating these scriptures, as I love Jill always saying that mothers are scriptures. So.
Well, one thing we can do is we can pray about it and meditate about it and explicitly ask Mother for an answer to whether it's shared with others or not. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things with what Mother taught in this book that are not readily accessible to people at different stages in development. So the book itself is a blueprint for these types of experiences. It's thorough, But is it exhaustive? Mother said no, that it, everyone has different, has these experiences in different way. But she does say that everyone goes through the spine and the brain. They go through the experiences of the spine and the brain. So, that seems, but again, that manifests, can manifest in many different ways, as the experiences, as you go through them.
Well, I hope you don't mind me sharing an experience, but years ago, I was over at Peter's in Kirkland when we used to meditate over there. And I kept having a sense there's a lot of pressure kind of in this part of my body. And it almost felt like there was something extending, just so much pressure. I thought, oh, there's Ganesha. There's that trunk. That's why Ganesha is important, is because you start having this. And then I was just reading in David's book Silence, where he was talking about a lot of pressure just right at the root of the nose. Mm-hmm. And I thought about my Ganesha thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that's why it kind of seems so individual and yet universal at the same time.
In yoga, they sometimes refer to the what we call the third eye point as the root of the nose, and it was mistranslated in English, and Western people got the notion it was the tip of the nose, but the correct translation, Master said, was the root of the nose. So
it can't be a third eye between the eyebrows if it's down here.
Yeah, exactly. But the end point of the nose, well, could be, you know, we could think of the tip of the nose as we use the term, but yeah, it makes more sense that it's consistent to say that it's the third eye point. Yeah.
Kate, what you were just bringing up about it being a different experience for each one, and the symbolism may change, it really rings true that we are each on our path through the spine, and that is the path that the Christ took all the way through the crucifixion and then beyond, and that is the path that Krishna, it took. I mean, you can recognize that path,
right,
no matter which holy stories and symbolism you're looking into, and eventually maybe recognize it in all of them.
Do you know,
that's what we're really talking about, is like here we are on this path, and I'm seeing myself in this part of it or this part of it, depending on where we are. And,
right.
and so it's important to not get caught up on individual details of, right, of symbolism, because mm-hmm. as you said, Larry, we can ask for that to be shown to us, right, and we will experience it in the way our soul needs,
right,
and carry on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this whole issue that we brought up last time too, what is holy science and these books for? You know, Papa says it's just all bhakti, just go straight to God. But at the same time, great masters teach this stuff. I mean, my gosh, I think the Ramayana is closer to the Christian story as a general. It's more clear that there's a circuit. He leaves Ayodhya. He goes down into the forest. He ends up in Sri Lanka having to fight, you know, for the release of who? Of Sita. Sita represents this Kundalini, locked in Kundalini forest. It's so beautiful. Now, in the Krishna story, it's so complex. The Mahabharata has each characteristic that is combined in some of the Christian and the Ramayana is separated out into an individual. It's very, very complex in it. And Master, well, of course, really understood it. And his identification of these different elements, these different characters, with the allegorical connection, Bhishma being the ego, and Bhima being the heart center, Arjuna being the second center, the third center, well, and stuff like that.
I think the disciples must, if you had all the stories, I think the disciples must have played those parts too.
Oh, so true. We're missing probably a lot of the story that they didn't understand as it came forward. That's so true. Yeah. Well, the great masters, as you know, the great masters who write these things move forward and give the best that they can bring forward into the future. And we have to acknowledge that there's much work to be done when we have the experiences ourselves to connect the things if we want to. But we do have a guidance with it. We do have, and it's the correct way to use the scriptures. But there are many different levels, aren't there? So there's many different levels of understanding. I love the Christian's understanding of the scriptures. It's very nice. And there's just some things that don't make a lot of sense to the higher teachings. And so it forces you into looking into the higher teachings to make sense of them.
Look at some saints like Padre Pio, who had such an ordeal with the opposing force. Right. Who would throw him across the room, who would do all sorts of things to him. I mean, if you were to take his life as a template for your path, you know, there's a lot in there that we may have difficulty with. And, you know, what part was that devil playing, you know, where was he in his Kundalini journey as he was having that tremendous oppositional force?
And he had fevers, so did St. Francis. So, yeah.
So did Mother. And she had those forces doing physical things with her earlier, right?
Yeah, she sure did, yeah. Where things were moving around in her apartments and things like that, yeah. Yeah, those things don't interest me too much, and I hope I don't have to go through it. Mostly because it's just distracting. And I find with Padre Pio's stories and some of the other Christian saints who talk so much about the devil, St. Anthony too, that they get, and this is why Mother points us away from focusing on that, getting too connected to the opposing force, and identifying the devil as a person. Now, Master and Mother both use the devil as a personality or a person, what would you call it? An identity. Mm-hmm. Papa says that it is only a thing of the mind, that there is no separate devil, but also Papa teaches us that there's no other self. There's no other self either. So it doesn't mean that we won't have these experiences as Padre Pio does too. But he's trying to force our minds away from. Go ahead, Joe.
I don't think Mother exactly felt like the devil was personified.
She would talk about the devil. Not so much in the later years.
That personification of the elusive force that distracts us, you know, and
one of my earlier experiences with Mother is I was into Seth material and I forget her name now. Jane Roberts or something like that. She's the one who was a medium for bringing Seth into the world. And I never went to any of those seances.
I read Jay-Z the books. Knight?
No, this is, that's Ramtha, isn't it? Yeah.
Right.
No, this was Jane Roberts. She was writing maybe 10 years before J.Z. Knight.
Was it called Seth Speaks or something?
Seth Speaks, Seth Material, and The Nature of Personal Reality were the three books that were really, powerful. So I was telling Mother about that, and she did not want me talking about it. She didn't want, I was just, you know, it fit into the conversation. It was in that context. And she stopped me and she said, and she looked at me in the eye and she said, "He's the devil." That broke it for me. I wasn't enamored with it. I didn't have any intention of getting involved in it, but she wanted my mind to not think of it that way. And that's what did it. That completely broke my even musing about it. I'm not too, or curiosity about it.
I remember that too, Larry. I don't know why I remember that, but I remember Mother saying that Seth was the devil, basically.
Oh, is that true? Well, this is stuff that came up in private conversations easily, too. But this was, we were going to Safeway. I was walking with her in the Safeway, and we were in the line, and she turned around. And I don't remember, but I was not embarrassed, because everything with Mother was, I was just wasn't able to be embarrassed in a sense that I was, felt really bad that I made a mistake or anything. She never made me feel that way, but she could be very forceful, and she did things, you know, that were powerful, and I accepted them without question. So maybe that's why it wasn't too traumatic for me, but it was loud enough for other people to see. And she pointed, she says, "He's the devil." So, and that just broke that interest in that whole way of thinking of things. And that's what she was trying to do. Yeah. That way of thinking of things is wrong. But she never denied that these entities don't inhabit people's bodies. And remember, she used to talk about walk-ins. And some of the people on the street, she said, in Seattle are walk-ins.
Do you know what? We were at a service in Victoria, and I don't know if that was the time Mother stayed with us, but the night before, oh no, it wasn't that time. Anyways, yeah, we were in Victoria. Mother was giving service, and as was her habit with her disciples.
Not that she wore habits, but go ahead. not this lifetime.
No. but in the middle of her sermon, out came something about the walk-ins.
Oh, yeah.
And I had been going through Ruth Montgomery's books.
Oh, very interesting. Sure.
A lot of them. And yeah, I was so taken by them. And bingo, after that, it was like, no more. You know, it's funny. Yeah. You described it exactly the way I experienced it, where it's like, and right in that moment, it was like, no more for me. Interesting, Elaine.
Yeah, yeah.
And same with your reaction, is the same. It didn't matter. Like,
I felt so below her that the fact that she even talked to me. So it's an element of that. It isn't that I don't feel guilt or anything. It isn't that at all. But it's just that I was already felt so below her in understanding that I just, everything she would talk to me about, I was happy to take.
It's like you're in a foreign country and someone showing you how to turn on the water. Like, how could you possibly know?
Perfect. They just have to. And yes, exactly. Who would be embarrassed about that?
Right.
That's a very good analogy. Yeah, exactly. But also the love that Mother had, the way that she did it, no matter how you felt outwardly, even if she raised her voice and she was sharp. Wow. I mean, you're just glad to be involved with her.
Mm-hmm.
It was such 100%. That honeymoon period is so powerful. And so for a lot of us, it lasted many years too.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a flash in the pan.
So nice, was there?
What's that?
I just said it's just nice to remember.
Oh,
it
sure is.
So nice
oh, it
to
sure
remember.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. That's the best thing about these books. And Kate's doing such a wonderful job on this new book too. You guys will really love it. But, we should probably talk a little more about the book. If anyone has any questions about what we just had her read to us, try to be fairly, topical, or at least on topic with this. So.
I'm curious about the Matthew 10:16 about the sheep and wolves and serpents and doves. And if you have thoughts on any of its deeper meanings. I mean, it seems fairly straightforward, but I wonder if it's referring to the wisdom of serpents as once the serpent has risen, the Kundalini has risen.
Right.
That brings wisdom. If that's the type of wisdom they're actually referring to, or if it's just a reference to an animal, that's smart.
Well, it is interesting about the fact that it's the knowledge of good and evil. Now, you know, Papa says that you don't see good and evil when you attain. When you go back to the Garden of Eden, perhaps is the way to look at it. When you attain realization, you don't see things as good, you don't, that dual aspect. So, it is very odd to think of it being the knowledge of good and evil.
because that sounds like a good thing. Before the fall, right? The serpent is disappear before the fall, and then not after the fall.
And in the Bible, he comes to Jesus. Isn't there a serpent in the Garden of Eden? Or is that just in that movie that I saw that I'm kind
of in the Garden of Gethsemane?
The Garden of Gethsemane. Sorry, yes.
Yeah,
I said Garden of Eden. Yeah, exactly. Are there other references to the serpent?
There's the tempter.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is. So in the show, the movie with the Passion of Christ, it was depicted as that. That's right. It was the temptation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, right. And Jesus saying, you know, having thoughts, gee, if I don't have to do this, or if it be your will, I'll do it. But if not, I'd like to get out of this if possible. Or I'd like you to not let this happen.
Yeah.
But it is for this I came. That's very powerful.
It's such a... Such a comfort to know that even Christ didn't want to take the last step if he didn't have to.
It was an acknowledgement of the severity of the experience. It was acknowledgement of where we are now at. He had 3 years of teaching, as the description is in the Bible shows it, and he was mobbed, loved, and hated. But at the same time, that crucifixion thing was like a curtain coming down and separating you from all of that regular life.
And he's all alone.
All alone and in a realm where you can just feel it as I think about it, as we talk about it, you can feel it. You're in a realm that is now, you don't have any connection. Or you're losing that connection to the realm, the very world stage that you were standing on. And he knew that the stage was all set for his exit, to go behind the curtain. Yeah. It's a wonderful, wonderful story.
That discussion made me remember what David had said on Sunday. So he was talking about... He was talking about Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Okay.
How three times, or after that, three times he was asked, do you know this man? No, yeah. I don't. Mm-hmm. And he was denying him. And mm-hmm. David was saying that he got that was the denial and the three different bodies, the physical, mm-hmm. the astral, the causal. Mm-hmm. And then I said that mother in one place then talks about what she got around that was that Christ is denying Jesus the ego self because he has That's to right. deny him because it's the mm-hmm. it's the Christed one that he wants.
The single soul, which Peter is a piece of,
right.
is speaking to
the ego self.
Yeah, to identifying this as I don't know you anymore.
Yeah.
No, I don't know him. Yeah. I remember we did talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, and it's not like one is right and one is wrong. They're both a wonderful revelation of what that time of Peter denying the Christ means. You know, both of them are useful. So,
well, once this Kundalini starts to move, it's extremely dangerous too. I remember with Charmel, when she went through this, well, of course, I came after she went through the really extreme experiences. And she's very balanced and very sweet to be around when I knew her, because she had just come through it in the previous 6 months or so. And she was actually a lay minister giving talks now and then, too. And pretty good talks. They were very interesting. But she was so happy and so joyful. And so lifted up that time. I just loved being around her. But so it's interesting to know her story, because I think it was Rose Is it Rose Wiley? Anyway, Rose, who had a bookstore down in Seattle. Anybody know? And she was new Charmel, and she told her she should go see Mother, that Mother mm-hmm. Hamilton could help you with this. She's and identified that. And when Beth met her, and everything. Now, I asked Charmel about that more specifically, so I think that story kind of is wrong. There was something going on with her, and she was directed maybe just in the sense like we all do. We direct someone. Mothers can either explain things to you or help you with what you're going through. But the Kundalini experiences, I asked her specifically. She said no, that all started when she met Mother. Mm-hmm. She was so ripe and ready. But it was Mother, meeting Mother, that and the physical presence of Mother that triggered it. So it's interesting to Mother wanted people to help her. She really was needing help. It was a fairly dangerous situation, or at least one you have to be careful with. You can't play around with it. And this again, it goes back to the story of Mother with Papa. She needed that protection. She needed someone to. Who has had enough standing in the community and power, in other words, there's a social aspect to it, but also power to deal with protecting her psychically and spiritually too, while she was going through this.
But it can be years and years and years and years, not just a few years where someone's standing guard over you.
And the first initial flame for some people is not very strong, probably because they'd been through it before and they were ready to go through the second or third chakra. They didn't. That first chakra was already gone through. Now I've always kind of seen it this way, so bear with me. It's like the hymen. It is like something that you break that is each lifetime you, as a woman, have and men must have some analogous thing. It'd be interesting to know. But there is, each lifetime you, start afresh, but sometimes the first time is very traumatic. And then, especially maybe perhaps if you are first time becoming a woman after being male for a long time, these are all ideas. They're not, I don't have any teachings about that, but it is like that. And some people really have a hard time with that initial flare up and others are already dealing with their heart center when they're born practically. Mm-hmm. So. And then there's Meher Baba and Ramana Maharshi and mm-hmm. they just got it instantaneously. Yeah. But of course they didn't get it instantaneously. If they are a normal person, they had to go through lifetimes to get there. Even that, there's no rules that we can live with, that we can hang our hat on. There's no rules in any of this. We don't know. Their avatars come down and fully realized, even as a child, like Krishna. I love that depiction of the Buddha when he's born. He comes out of the womb and walks. he gets out in it. And where every place he steps his foot, there's a lotus flower comes out of the ground from that place.
When that's the rules, it's hard to make any rules.
Right. But those stories are told to lift us, to imagine that such a great master was on the earth. But it's so much more enticing and perhaps more dangerous, but to think of this all occurring within yourself. Because, you know, the story of Jesus being the head boss, and he's always going to be your boss, is so human. Projection into it, and it's so much greater than that we are. Who knows? And Mother talks about sounds that come from the chakras as you go, as it goes up.
I wonder what the translation of through me, you know, if there's, because there's so much lust in this.
If the me is in that depiction, meaning a place of in the skull, in, you know, then yeah, it would make sense that it's going through the third eye point. And when Mother talks about a hole in the skull, perhaps she's talking about the astral skull too, because you know the astral.
She was saying, she didn't say a hole in the skull. She said a
hole in the brain.
It was a cavity, a small cavity in the brain.
So say, tell the rest of it, or go a little before and a little bit after that.
And it rises in the spine, and you find that the power within you increases and increases until finally it goes out of your body through a small cavity in the brain and rests on the top of your head.
Now, if the body means the torso, this is where these translations of... Now, but Mother was talking in English that we all understand, but she might have seen that as being the torso, going in from the torso into the, because the hill of Golgotha, you know, that Golgotha business is the hill of the skull. It means the skill, the skull. This is where it all comes from. It's the circuit. It's clearly the circuit. It goes, you go down into the body and you come
back.
So
listen again. Finally, it goes out of your body through a small cavity in the brain and rests on the top of your head. At another point, she talked about the soft spot, the fontanelle.
Right.
And that's at the top as well.
Right, right.
But this isn't the final experience that she's talking about either.
No.
So this is... You have no longer the division between good and evil within yourself, but the whole house is the house of the Lord.
Yeah, and then...
Maybe faint consciousness that she's describing.
You know, Meher Baba used to have his disciples read... he had two books, but one book in his early days, he would say... Read this book. The book is called The Perfect Master. It's an incredible book. And it's a biography about Meher Baba and much more. And when you get finished with the end of the book, go back to the first page and start reading it again. And then later, after he wrote the book God Speaks, he then transferred everyone's attention to that with the same admonition. You just read these things over and over, and he said, you will learn it. You will learn it that way. No matter, don't worry too much about how your mind understands things, but to read it again and again. You know, and that's such an intellectual approach to things. But every master knows his disciples and draws to them themselves the disciples who will benefit from that. So, and other people have, you know, Shirdi Sai Baba, he was asked, and Mother, when she was with Papa, she asked him, what should we do while we're here? And he said, what I want you to do is nothing. Well, Sai Baba said the same thing to his disciples throughout his life, from what I understand. He always said, I'll do the work. You just do nothing. Stop trying to do things. Greg says, I can sign up for that. Well, you know, it really is. It does raise
the really is that it really is the goal. Papa is God. The job is to stop doing things.
What we see as doing things.
I must say, when I read that thing about the serpent in the cavity, I saw it all. I mean, I just felt it was an a spiritual, more like an astral experience, that it wasn't physical. So I never had any problem with it. It just felt ethereal.
Right, right. I could see it either way, yeah, for sure.
So I never had any trouble with it for that reason. There was also that, like some of the people that were helping me proof the book, there was the mother describing the Kundalini. There's an expansion and a contraction. Mm-hmm. People were saying, how could it be an expansion and a contraction?
Right, right.
I couldn't understand it. And yet just inside it felt yes, yes. And so, and a few other people had that experience. We decided to leave it in, that it wasn't, mm-hmm. didn't matter that it was a contradiction in a sense, that it was expansion, contraction.
And the snake is the perfect metaphor for that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely that throbbing is the only way I can describe it, that expansion, contraction.
Well, what drew my attention to this crucial question, which is, except you come through me, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and except you come through me, you cannot get to the Father, was an experience of like this, where as the energy came into my skull, and for days afterwards, I felt this pulsing, a shaft that was connecting my medulla to my third eye point. And my whole brain from there on, I felt a swelling and then a softening. And the, just a tender part of my brain. It just turned my brain to mush inwardly. And it was, but what I'm trying to bring up here is that I had to bring the energy and it had to go out the third eye point. It could not go straight up. There was a tendency, and I could feel the top of my head. I could see that. But this was a horizontal connection from my medulla to my third eye point. And it was directly the energy coming up the spine that caused that to occur. And so, and then that's why this, the cobra being coming out of the third eye point, and then the final realization is that the cobra sitting, as Mother says, it sits on top of the head, makes sense. And because I had an early experience with Mother where I felt the energy come from the bottom of my spine up to the top of my head, went right up my spine up to the very top of my head with no, sideways motion, no crossing at all. And then literally feeling a flame coming out the top of my head. Well, but from that point on, everything changed or started. One thing, this is what happens when you have someone who's a siddhi or a satguru. When things happen, they're so dramatic sometimes that you can't, you identify Mother as the person who did it. So when she says Papa breathed out the and then started her into that experience, this is because this really did happen. And it was a powerful experience. She had to deal with what it meant and what it resulted in. So I think it's important that I think everyone here has taken Kriya, right? So the Kriya, the circuit is that way. It takes you up, takes you out to the third eye, around and in through the cerebellum and back down. And it does not take you straight to the top of the skull. Mm. Very interesting. And you can feel that energy in the Kriya circuit continuously throughout the day. It's interesting that Mother can remember so much, and she taught so, I think she taught so soon after these experiences too, in the 1960s, and started teaching this stuff. She was fairly close to it, and so she could remember what happened at the first chakra, the second chakra, the third chakra. Mm-hmm. Or she was able to do it afterwards, to explore through her own body. I mean, David talks about discovering that one day, he told me, there's a place in the brain that you can, through which you can go to leave the body. And that's how the, when people just consciously leave their body, we hear this, but how in the world would you do it? What's going on there? And when he discovered that, he realized, my gosh, that's really, it's just, it's a realizable thing. Mm-hmm. He had so many experiences that he couldn't tell us all of them. He told different people different parts too. Well, I think the rest of the chapter will fill in some of these details, and or at least extend the discussion to talk about this again. So I'm really glad we're doing this in two parts.
Are we? I'm bringing this up because I can ask you afterwards, but I will bring it up for everybody. Are we meeting next week, the day before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think so. Sure. Yeah. Actually, Thanksgiving is 2 weeks from now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I keep doing that too, Kate.
Boy, can't you just feel Mother right now as we talk about this stuff?
When you brought up David, he came very strongly.
Right, in. He comes too. Yeah.
I started, Larry, to transcribe that bit of the talk that had us stopped. And
thank you.
I have some of it here. It's just all the talk of the symbolism, all of the details of, you know, the journey through the spine and the brain kind of fall away with his words. And I'm happy to share what I have got so far. He's speaking quite quickly, actually, at that moment. And so
that's why you wanted me to back it up. Yeah. I'm so glad you did.
And then just trying to write it down. It's taken listening to it many times and I still don't have it all. So this is just a bit, but he's talking about once that, essentially that rising has taken place, that's, our consciousness is no longer drawn to the things of the world. The idea of being in the world, but not of it. And then it vacillates between the human aspect and the divine or the universal aspect. And there is no difference, only a different perspective. And we can see ourselves as individual ray of light, or we can see ourselves as the whole sun, radiating that light along with everything. That takes sadhana, practice, 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 and letting go of the results. And we just stay focused on chanting on God's name, doing our meditations. I missed a part after that. When we enter into the exterior life, retain that inner consciousness with you. Feel that radiance shining out. And there's another break. And then you can do all the things of this world in an ordinary way, but you don't once take your mind off God. And you don't lose a thing, but what you gain is this whole interior consciousness. It is the most ennobling thing that one can do for mankind. This is our destiny. We have to say yes to it through our thoughts. Through our actions, we say yes. We don't just say yes once. We don't say it twice. We say it moment to moment to moment through every day, through every week, and through every year. And that is sufficient. God will do everything else. And in this way, we become sanctified. And we enter into that association with the other saints who have also purified their bodies and their minds and their hearts.
He was a poet sometimes, wasn't he? Mm. You know, Jill, it reminds me of what Swamiji said to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell that story?
The very first time we went to the ashram, I thought it was about the eighth day I was there, and I thought, this is it. If ever I'm going to jump into the ocean and surrender everything to God, this is it. And I can't see it ever being easier, and I can't see another opportunity. And I went to Swamiji and told him that. And he looked at me and he said, wonderful. Now do it again. Now do it again.
That's
every second.
Yeah. Trying to show you how, what you've signed up for.
Yeah. You don't get to do it just once.
But he gave you a feeling for the real experience, saying, when you get there, you will find yourself doing this continuously.
Yeah.
Without thought. Mm. Yeah, that's a wonderful lesson. Mm. Always loved that story. Mm. Oh, he was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so kind, so sweet. Mm. When I was first with him, I couldn't open my eyes in his presence. My eyes were clamped down so tight. And my inner vision was just literally riveted to the third eye point. When I'd come into the room, he would wave his hand and the whole experience would start again. I would just be uplifted and I would close my eyes. I'd barely sit down. Sometimes he was waved by his hand to have me come sit up front. And I'd go sit up front and sit down and be locked in, sitting on a chair. So I wasn't locked in lotus, but my whole body was rigid. Mm. That power that he had, just amazing.
Larry, are you talking about the first time you went to the ashram?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I will have to tell you that when you came back from there, the energy coming from you was so amazing and sweet. And it's funny because I could never read Papa's books before. They just, nothing ever connected with my mind. But after you came back, I don't know why, but I was able to read, understand, and just take into my heart all of his books. So that was, yeah, that didn't change just you.
No, thank you for telling me that. It's very interesting. Yeah. You know, those of us who have gone to an ashram, we always feel safe there, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can sometimes be difficult there and sometimes a powerful experience, but...
protected.
Yeah. A peaceful haven.
And night and morning.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I always remember, Larry, the first time I went, and then the day that you and Kate arrived, and how Swamiji was just beginning a walk. And everything just stopped. And he bring, you know, oh, Larry's here. He just stopped everything and everyone gathered around and it was so, so sweet to see how much he loved you and how it was like, ah, oh, Kate and Larry are here.
Yeah.
I just always remember that. So I was like, wow, because I didn't even know that you had been there before at that point. Mm. But it was just like.
Yeah, you weren't with Davis very long before you went to India, were you?
No.
Yeah. Was that 2002?
Yes.
Yeah, we went on Michelle and I were the kids who tagged along on the honeymoon.
Yeah. Well, it was, yeah, after his year of silence. So you come and meet him. Take Kriya, and then he takes off for a year.
I know. My ego was a little bruised for a minute or two. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Really? I'm not going to drive all the way. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I am. Next thing, I was going down to Cloud Mountain.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it was still a very rich time, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say our closing prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am thee. Oh.